Attention all you gamers, hobbyists, and lovers of all things dicey. Ragnarok 5.0 is upon us. Mark your calendars for April 26th and 27th, 2025, because the museum in downtown Kitchener is about to be overrun by board game enthusiasts, RPG fanatics, and maybe even a few real-life Vikings. That's right, folks. We're talking board games, RPGs, miniature games, vendors, and enough dice rolling to make your head spin. But wait, there's more. We've got open gaming tables, a massive Ragnarok library where you can try before you buy, and the return of Play to Win where you can win free games just by playing. So gather your friends, sharpen your dice, and get ready to game like the world is ending. Ragnarok 5.0, see you there.
Hey, David.
Yes, my good friend.
Yes, my good friend. Oh, God. I don't have a rant today. I don't. I have nothing to be sad about. Do you know why? Because
why
today I filled up my gas tank for $1.18. I could not be mad at anything today. Could I be mad that like I stepped in a puddle and my feet were wet for an hour? Sure. Could I be mad that like my favorite soft drink seems to be discontinued? Absolutely. But to save 40 cents a liter on gas on a Wednesday? Oh my God. No rant. I got nothing. I'm so happy. Like,
yeah, but
no, just happy.
Yeah, but you just said that you are could be mad that your favorite soda pop is gone.
Yeah, but I'm not because I paid.
So you're happy that your favorite soda pop's gone?
Well, I'm a little upset about it. You're trying to get me to rant. Okay. But you know what I mean? Like, it's those little wins, right?
Yeah, like when the temperature gets finally above 5 degrees for more than 2 days in a row.
Do you know what that's like? Because like we've had it up and down. It's pretty bad here. The other day it was snowing again. I blame somebody who listens to this show for changing his truck tires to summers.
Hey, my tires are still winter tires and they will be until about mid-June.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all you got to do is pull the chains off and then it's summer and then you're back on.
Yeah. Yeah. You know who probably does not have to wear chains on their tires at all? The listeners of this episode of the Scene on Screen podcast.
See, now all I want to do is complain about the soda pop. Look at what you've done to me. You've made me this jagged dude who's just upset that I can't have my new favorite flavor of pop.
I'm pretty sure we had the same segue like two episodes ago. Now that I think about it. Yeah.
The Scene on Screen podcast, 25% reused segues.
We could do that. We could have just a section, like a segment of the best segues. Yeah, and worst.
We don't have time for that today, David, because we have two special guests with us. We have our good friend Tony, who's been around with us numerous times. He's recorded episodes. He's played D&D. He's done everything with us. Tony, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm really grateful that you guys let me out of the basement this time
for recording this. We had to get you to think about what you did with Pop. We were a little concerned that you were still too attached to that character, so we had to let you like cool down for a little bit.
Yeah, it's still hard thinking about him.
Do you think about him often?
Every moment of every day.
What about what was his name? Finn or Gurr's companion friend, Toblob.
Toblob. Yeah. Nobody has ever muttered this name before.
It's an original name I thought of just right now.
Do you know another original name that I just thought of right now? Is Pete. I've never heard that name before until I guess last year when we recorded the same episode. See, that is called a bad segue. But we have Pete from the Ragnarok Experience here to go over Ragnarok 5.0 and a little bit of a special look into a tabletop game he's running for the guys of the Scene on Screen podcast at Ragnarok at the end of the month. Pete, how the hell are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm stressed because there's, you know, a con in a few weeks, but it's good stress. because it's the same stuff we go through every year. And I'm, you know, kind of on pins and needles about getting everything done on time and making everybody have a really good experience.
I mean, I know for one, I'm super excited. I can only speak for David because he hasn't been there before, but I'm assuming he's super excited.
Vicariously, I was there last year.
And Tony, he's been shaking for 3 days. So we know he's excited. Also
because he's malnourished and we've had him tied down to the water heater in the basement for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, with a picture of Pavlov's.
I'm not used to seeing all these lights.
So let us in on the biggest secret in the world. When is Ragnarok? What is Ragnarok? And what should we expect for 5.0?
Ragnarok is sort of the KW regions or Waterloo regions only tabletop-centric gaming convention. We're pretty much analog unplugged for the most part. It's if you like dice, if you like cards, if you like playing miniature games, if you like just hanging out with friends and doing goofy things together around a table, we've got you covered. We've got vendors. We've got some live Vikings, hopefully, again this year, like we usually get out. We've got snacks. We've got bevies, including TWB, one of our sponsors, is going to be supplying fresh craft beer. And oddly enough, I am one of the brewers there, and I made a very special brew again this year called Thimble Winter, which will be coming back. And our other sponsor, North Star Travel, is supplying us with the massive Viking mugs again. We've got a huge truckload of them coming in. So basically almost anybody who wants one of the souvenir glasses this year is going to get one. So
yeah, except Tony, don't lose yours this year.
Oh, I know. How big are these Viking mugs you speak of?
They're like a liter and a quarter.
Yeah,
I think
I just need to know because I'm flying down this year. I'm making the long journey across the province of Ontario. I don't think people realize how big Ontario is when we say that stuff.
Yeah, it's not a short jaunt.
It definitely is not. So I'm super excited to come down this year. So
yeah, they're big and heavy. You know, we could probably just ship one to you or a couple to you, you know.
I mean, I'll.
It looks sweet on that shelf behind you.
It would also probably look sweet in my hand with a large amount of ale in it.
You are going to enjoy Thimble Winter. I would highly recommend to people, if they can, do not drive to this event because the beer is tasty AF.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
That is and frosty. It has nothing to do with it.
That was so, a good save.
Yeah. So it's going to be on April 26th and 27th. So hopefully people have enough time after listening to this episode to, you know, get their weekends planned. It's the one after Easter, so you don't wreck any of your family plans. We always try to do it at the end of April every year. So if you're planning out your yearly gaming ventures going off, then we try to stick to the same timeline every year. This is number 5 for us. So it's bigger, badder, more games. Just keep going. We're taking over more floors of the museum this year. Which I don't know if I mentioned we're at the museum.
There's more floors to that museum?
There's 5 floors in total.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so there's 2 that we didn't really utilize last year, and we were busting at the seams. So this year we're planning ahead, and we're changing around the configuration. You remember how you played the mini games and stuff in the basement last year?
Mm-hmm. Well, I vaguely remember those, yeah.
Yeah. Same guy's coming back for the Mythic Gods. Minis are actually going upstairs onto the 3rd floor. So you kind of have like be able to like overlook down into the main con. You won't be relegated to the dungeon anymore.
Okay.
And you have more space to spread out. So it won't be kind of as noisy right next to the table right beside you.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Cause that was a little bit tricky, like trying to play those games and you're just hearing like a battle and a war happening at the table beside you.
Yeah. You know, it happens when you're up in the RPG lounge. Cause everybody gets like sort of, you know, excited about their characters and what's going on and stuff. The miniature games, we didn't plan for that as much last year. So, you know, we learn from our mistakes every year.
Yeah, the Star Wars game that was happening while we were playing Fallout was...
Well, Shatterpoint?
Was that what it was?
No, that would have been Starborg. So basically a Morkborg variant that one of our good friends and like all-time GMs runs. And he uses the squishy little Star Wars figures, which... Ragnarok Eric actually has as well. So when he runs Star Wars, he uses those same things. So, but yeah. People get really heated and animated over that game. So
it was very loud. People were making like the fighting noises, the starship noises. It was really fun, but it took away from our Fallout experience.
So we're talking a little bit about what Ragnarok is, what you guys had last year. Can you tell our listeners who went last year what they can expect to be different this year in regards to games? Any new vendors, any new, anything new that's really coming?
Yeah, so we have swapped out some vendors this year. So, and some are going to be returning. I believe you guys are doing interviews with some of our returning vendors, actually.
One vendor for sure.
So we have game designers and vendors, and they're kind of the same thing in that regard. But we have all the game designers are all going to be up in the same area of the floor. So if you're looking to demo and try stuff and buy things like that, they should be all kind of together this year. We have some new vendors that weren't out last year. It happens every year. Just the way that cons work is that not everybody has time to come out to everyone all the time. We have a lot of returning ones, like our dice vendors and our sort of plushy vendors and stuff like that, which have been some of them been with us since day one. It's Ragnarok 1.0. And then we have some new ones that are coming out this year as well. A cool one is going to be Andrew V from Fate of the Norns and Pendlehaven Press. So he does Viking stuff, which is like right in theme with our con. And he was out for like old school Ragnarok before like pandemic and stuff. And he's got really cool, neat system, which I hope some people get to demo. It's rune-based. There's no dice whatsoever.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. BSG or BS Games is coming back, which does the Sonoda game. And they've got some other demo material that they're going to be bringing, I believe, this year. So we're setting up a demo table in front of them so that they can sort of do the play testing of like new weird stuff that they're developing that's not ready for print or anything like that yet. The Emlyriel guys are going to be coming back. They've got new book that they're launching at Ragnarok. So we're the launch platform for them, which is really cool and exciting for us. And we actually have another podcast coming out that are going to be recording a session there as well. So
don't tell us that.
Yeah.
That's like telling us, that's like telling your children that like the Tooth Fairy doesn't actually.
Well, I'm not gonna name drop on yours. How about that?
Wow, is there?
They'll have to come check it out.
Follow. Are you seeing another podcast?
No, they're basically kind of like a baby like Critical Role. So they record their own game sessions stuff, kind of like how you did your D&D. That's all they do, and so they're gonna be recording a game session live there.
Sean is shook. It's the just first so time you know, that Sean is shook.
It's the first time that they've ever actually met in person.
This really? Is brand new information for me. I was not aware. Did I read that right?
Yeah. So what you're saying though is that for people who want to come and play games, they have games they can play. But for people who want to get a taste of new and upcoming games and talk to developers, this is going to be a great opportunity for them to be able to talk to the people who create these games too, right?
Absolutely. In fact, every single one of them is going to be running game demos that you could sign up to play in one of their slots. And they'll also have like options available, like right at their vendor booths. So like Bill and Scott will challenge you to play Sonoda. And actually, if you win against them, you get like a special like commemorative sticker that nobody else has that you get to put on your game box, basically saying I beat the game designer. And you can only get it if you're at a con with them playing.
That's cool.
Which is kind of neat.
Tony was so close last year. I think he had him within a move, and then he fudged it near the end. But
I think they changed the rules at the last second or something.
No, yeah. That's usually what happens.
That's usually what happens, right? Someone flipped the table, and then that's like a rule in the game that if you flip the table, you win automatically.
David, I'm very excited for you to try Sonoda, and when we have those guys on, I think in 2 weeks, they'll talk a little bit more about it. So that's exciting.
So like I said, we're changing the layout a little bit. So, the TWB bar is going to be down on the main floor, which leaves more room for vendors upstairs. So that's all going to be second floor. Main RPGs and everything are going to be second floor again. We've got a couple extra tables in there because we're already busting at the seams. The Saturday midday time slot and the evening are almost full already. So we've almost hit the same amount of games signed up for at this moment that we did the entire con last year.
Well,
wow. That's like insanely impressive.
So
do you know what the attendance was last year?
We had between 750 and 850 people, like turnstile between the 2 days.
Yeah.
Probably no more than about 350 people in the building at once. But there's a lot of coming and going because people are going out and grabbing coffee at Tammy's and getting lunch and stuff. Cause there's food everywhere downtown, literally right across the street, right out the front door. So you've got options, which is great. Where when we used to be at the hotels, you either had to deal with like the hotel bar, which couldn't handle the volume of people that we brought in. And so you'd be waiting like 45 minutes to an hour and a half for lunch. And then you get it and just be a big pile of disappointment. Whereas now, you know, the museum's going to have like some chips and snacks and pop and stuff like that. And just so that if you're just feeling peckish, you don't have to leave. But otherwise, it's literally a 2 minute walk out the front door. And there's pizza and subs and Timmy's and nice coffee, two nice coffee shops right at the front. There's options galore. And then there's two hotels like within a block as well. So you don't have to drive.
Frisky.
And we're also only a block away from the LRT stops as well. So if you're elsewhere in town, you can just grab the train. You don't have to worry about parking down the museum.
Do not drive.
Yeah. And so for people who are listening who haven't been here before, like you just heard that, you know, over 300 people per day. Right. So it's not a small con. This is big. Right. So this is.
Well, and it surprised us switching venues to be central and more sort of downtown city centric really upped the game for us. And we weren't expecting how well last year did. We were planning for what the normal hotel stuff was, which was about, 200 to 280 people on the Saturday and maybe like 150 people on the Sunday. And it just exploded last year. We were beg, borrowing, and stealing tables from all over town. We took all of TWB's tables. We had friends and family just bringing stuff to the museum and dropping it off because we were literally busting at the seams. We didn't have enough tables. They've got tons of chairs because they're a wedding venue as well, but they don't have enough tables for us. So this year we've bought, I think we're up to about 19 tables right now that we bought specifically to come to the con. All new shelving for the library to kind of make it look nicer.
And then you'll return it all to Amazon afterwards, right?
Oh no, we need to keep, we're going to keep growing that collection actually. Cause we want to keep growing the con, right? So we're going to keep needing tables. And then it also means if we ever have to switch venues for any reason whatsoever, again, then we're kind of like set. We're ready to go with our own stuff. So because like, we have like our game library, which people love coming out and just playing free games and trying out stuff that they may have not have bought before, and allows them to do it like a try before you buy. Right. Mm-hmm. We also have our play to win library, which actually just recorded a video. I haven't posted it yet of all the free games that have been sent to us by various game companies all over Canada and the US and Europe. And Galeforce 9 actually just shipped us a ton of swag. It just showed up today. Hopefully we don't have to pay a giant tariff fee on it, but we don't know yet. Like last year, I think we gave away somewhere between 2,500 and 3 grand worth of free stuff. So if you just showed up to the con, you have a chance of like just walking away with free games and free swag.
Yeah.
Like Galeforce supplies a lot of like if you play tabletop or anything like that, where you need terrain, where you need to work on your models and do painting and stuff like that. Like a lot of D&D players now are playing with minis where it used to all be theater of the mind and just using pen and paper. Right. But minis is now becoming a big thing because everybody's got 3D printers and it makes life sort of more tactile and immersive as you're playing. So they supply a lot of the stuff. So you need little snips and files and paintbrushes and calipers and all the little stuff like that. So we gave it Eric just walked around last year with bags of this stuff and was just tossing them at people because they sent us so much stuff. Everybody's like, whoa, sweet. Like they're high end clippers. They're not like the cheap $5 sets off of Amazon.
So what you're saying is that I should come with like those fake glasses, different wigs and stuff like that so that I can show up. And then when they're handing random things out to people, they won't know that they've handed me 4 or 5 different things.
They're not paying attention enough to even notice.
No, and David, you guys are a sponsor of ours, right? So,
I don't get any free shit?
No, I'm saying, what do you want? I will hook you up.
I just want some friends up here.
And your first beer is on me too.
Oh, you guys heard that right here.
You know, well, the last time I saw you was like your birthday at TWB.
It wasn't even my birthday.
But... Oh, it was that was just a joke going around?
No, yeah. It was the night before his wedding, and you guys got everybody so smashed. And then we all had to drive to Toronto the next day, and that was a lot.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, it was fun.
Okay, so super quick question about character gen. We've heard through the grapevine, you're the grapevine, but we've heard through the grapevine that to kind of enhance the con experience this year, you're going away from character generation at the con, and you're encouraging all game masters to kind of bring the character sheets or pre-builds. Can you talk to that a bit?
Yeah, well, normally that's kind of like the vibe at most cons, except for in situations where you're playing league play. So league play would be like D&D Adventurers League or Pathfinder Adventures, which I don't know if you've met Jeff, DM Jeff, who comes to TWB and runs games. He'll run stuff in the league, and you can take those characters there and play them anywhere. At Ragnarok specifically, unless they're going to be a league game, we're just kind of really encouraging GMs to have pre-built just ready to go, like just a stack of papers they can just hand out. People can pick the one that they like, because it's only a single 4-hour one shot for the most part. Some sessions will be like over one or two sessions. There's somebody else actually running Fallout this year who's got two sessions, and it's a part one and part two to the same game. So your characters will kind of transfer over there, but otherwise pretty much at the end of the con it's and you're ripping your sheet in half and you're done, right? So don't feel like you need to have extra time to sit there and really think things out. You should literally have a page with stats in front of you, and you're ready to rock for the game and just start playing as soon as you sit down at the table.
So a lot of these like tabletop RPGs that you're gonna have at the con, I guess most games have very similar mechanics, whether they're based off of like D&D or something else similar, right? With like rolling dice and whatnot. So
yeah, well, because D&D was, you know, one of the progenitors of this type of thing, right? A lot of this stuff started way back in like a couple US cities and British cities as a way of basically taking the fun of like playing with your little die cast miniatures for battles and stuff like that, and figuring out how can we make this a little bit more structured than just say, by the way, you're dead. Mm-hmm. And so people develop rules, and this is kind of how like a lot of the really old school war games and stuff would be played, and also how people maybe think about having adventures with their guys. And so the rules and stuff got developed, and there's actually like really good books and articles out there if you wanted to read on like back on like the design days of like Gary Gygax and stuff like that, who was like one of the founders of D&D. His son Luke Gygax still runs Gygax like GaryCon, which is a massive D&D convention and a bunch of other stuff, which some of our vendors actually went to. So there'd be some good questions to have for them about like what's it like doing a massive con in the States versus coming up and doing mm-hmm. like the small Canadian one, right?
So for someone who wants to maybe branch out from saying playing a traditional D&D campaign, like they know how to make their characters, this would be a good opportunity for them to play a game without having to worry about learning how to make a specific character for that game. They can just dive in and start learning to play the game itself and the mechanics of that game, right?
Generally, a GM is pretty well versed in the rules of the game that they're running for the most part. Some are new GMs, so that might not be the case, but the point of Ragnarok is to get people together and roll some dice or something thereof, to just have fun. So if you're spending too much time kind of thinking up a concept for a character that you're literally going to rip the page up at the end, it kind of slows down the fun, and we want to just kind of keep it rolling. We only have 3 sessions, main like RPG sessions on Saturday and 2 on Sunday. So you don't want to be wasting all that time just doing character generation. So mm-hmm. we basically ask GMs, please have papers ready to go, spread them out on the table. You can have as many as the seats you have, because those are the ones that you want for your game. Because you're the narrator, these are the characters in your story. Or have like 20 of them, and it doesn't matter. Like something like playing OSC is like basically it's agnostic to whatever the characters are going to be, because the game fundamentally doesn't change. The story doesn't change. It's just how the players go about making their characters do things in it based on what they see on their sheet. So a lot of sheets in the pre-gen world will actually have like a little description written down on the sheet about like, what do they look like? How do they act? And like what, you know, a 2-sentence backstory. And that's basically all you need to worry about to wrap your mind around. And you can get right into role playing. OSC is really good for that. They've got like a thick book of like pre-gens, because anytime you're playing like old school role playing, like really old school, it's very lethal. Your characters, you might actually go through 2 or 3 characters in a 4-hour play session because they're just dropping so fast.
How thick is this book? Like how many C's?
I think there's like 80 characters in there. It's
oh my gosh.
That's a 3C thick right there.
That's just mostly characters.
Mm-hmm. And so when I run games and I do pre-gens, I kind of just whip up some stuff like really quick, high level. I don't really mm-hmm. delve in. Like if you're making a character for a campaign and you're going to be playing that for a while, you usually have like a concept in your head and you really want to sort of think about what direction you want to go, especially as you maybe start leveling up through the level up mechanics.
So as we kind of navigate through Ragnarok, we understand what Ragnarok is. Tony was there with me last year. Mm-hmm. Now, Tony, going from your experiences, what are you coming to expect for this second version of Ragnarok based off everything Pete's kind of said? And what are you looking the most forward to?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things I'm most excited about that Pete mentioned is, well, what we're just talking about right now, which is the pre-gen stuff. I had an experience with Sean where we jumped into kind of a D&D equivalent game, and the character creation process for new players can be very number crunchy. So
yeah, depending on the system, you're right. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. So you're just sitting there like doing math and trying to figure these out. And if you don't understand what the numbers actually mean, then what are you actually calculating? So you have to provide the context and then the math. So it can be quite challenging. So for me, the pre-gen stuff is most exciting because that's the stuff I enjoy, like jumping right into the game and actually playing. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hoping for is that the pre-gens are going to be, you know, different enough. You have little character archetypes that you might have a certain flavor that you enjoy playing. And having those options would be more than enough for a lot of people to still get that very personalized experience.
That was one of the most satisfying things when it came to Shiver, right? You sat down, there was a pile of like 10 characters, there was 5 players, and it was just mm-hmm. like, I will be that. You get to pick one thing to carry in your hand. Okay, cool. Done.
Oh, for sure. And you can always add your own little dynamic to it too.
Yeah, that's kind of like a rules light game. So there's quite a few RPGs out there that are like that, where they're like rules light and it's all about the story and the adventure, less focus on the actual characters. Whereas D&D is very focused on the individual characters because they're a main character in the story and it's all about them. Versus like something like Shiver, there's something else going on and you're just kind of there, right? Which makes Shiver a lot of fun. And DMJ's got, he's actually built like a really cool app to whip up the characters really fast. So every single game that you play with him, it's pretty much a brand new on-the-fly pre-gen character that he's whipped up. And that just prints out. And so they're all different. You don't play the same one twice. Because there's so many different genres in that game. It's not like D&D, which is like kind of a fantasy setting, and it's just a fantasy setting unless you really bend the rules a lot. Mm-hmm. Shiver is like, you're members in a band that are kind of falling apart at the seams. You are workers on a farm. Your maintenance crew on a spaceship, and the things falling apart around you.
I think I've actually played the band one with the pumpkin head farmhouse that lights on fire. Yeah, I remember that one. Your like van breaks down. That's so weird that you pulled that one out of your ass. I like that.
Spoiler alert.
I haven't even played that one. I just literally pulled that out of my ass.
I played it at TWB with some of the guys from there in Raven. So like it was a really good time.
Yeah, we kind of at the brewery, we kind of have like a rotating crew of people who really enjoy coming and playing role-playing games there for some reason. I don't know. Nerds and beer, I just go good together, I guess.
I'm really excited for the fact that we don't have to create characters, because as much as I love playing D&D, the character, and it's not even just in tabletop RPGs, like character creation in video games is like my least favorite aspect of the games. And I know some people really dive into it. They want to make their character look like themselves or whatnot. for me, I just want to get into the game. So I'm excited that this is a new direction that you're going with the setup for this stuff, because it allows someone like me who just wants to get in and start playing these games to come in and start playing these games rather than spending time making a character and all that stuff. And
yeah, it's really always kind of been the premise behind one shots and how the con works, but we've never really like gone to the GMs and say, by the way, don't muck around unless this is part of the core mechanic of how the game works. Like there is some games where like building the character is basically how the game is played. But there's very few and far, like they're far in between. Most stuff is basically based around kind of like old school D&D or new school D&D or derivatives thereof. And then there's other people who've made other systems that are following like an RPG archetype where you have stats that you have to track of some sort and you do things based on those.
Right.
So it's supposed to be like rules agnostic. You have a character, you can play it. And if it's a pre-gen, you're not making any changes. You're just jumping into the game. And that's kind of where we want to focus things, because it just, like I said before, it makes everything more fun.
It's going to make the experience better for everyone. So I have a question. Well, I have a question for Tony a little bit, because Tony and Sean were here, were there last year. I'm curious as to what you guys are most excited for Ragnarok 5, and why is it the Fallout RPG that we're going to be playing?
You know what? I'm gonna defer to Tony here. We all know how much I love Fallout, so I'll let him take the reins.
Sean's got a full-on Fallout chub going on just the moment.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
you can see my Fallout chub right inbox now. Right behind me.
Yeah, Pete's wearing a shirt with a what's his name? A Vault.
That's Vault Boy.
Vault
Tech shirt. Yeah.
Hey, you learn who that actually is if you watch the show.
I did watch the show.
Does he remember it? Not even a little, but that's
not
fine.
One bit. Oh yeah, wait, hold on. He's the guy.
The thumbs up guy.
The thumbs guy.
He's
got thumbs.
Yeah. All right, Tony, take it away. What are we looking forward to when it comes to Fallout?
Well, I mean, actually, the funny thing is, last year I didn't know anything about Fallout, so that was fresh new experience for me.
You never played any of the video games or anything?
Like I saw it in passing. Maybe I saw someone else play it. Maybe like a YouTube video, but I never actually got my hands on it. I see Pete shaking his head. He's very upset with me. But good news. After that experience last year in Ragnarok 4.0, it drew me to it. Because then I saw it, like, you know, the show pop up. I'm like, you know what? Like, this is the thing that Pete was talking about. This is the thing that I played in. I might as well check it out. So it was kind of a moment for me to discover something new and something I quite enjoyed. So I'm actually, I'm really loving Fallout. I find myself reading the wiki to learn more about the lore, because it's very intriguing, because there's all these different factions and all these different interactions between them. It's so cool, and I love it. So I think this time coming back around, I have a much better understanding of that world, and that is very exciting to me, because now I get to participate as somebody who is actually into
that vault dweller.
Have you learned about the real Rodian, Tony?
The what?
The railroad. Have you learned about the railroad and the Minutemen?
The railroad.
Yeah, they're all the, like, if you play Fallout 4 versus like a 76, which is a little bit more open world and kind of out of control. I will say they fixed it, so it's fine.
It's a lot better now. I jump in twice a year and dabble my toes in 76.
It's a lot better 10 years later.
Yeah, that's a genuine edition. Really held up.
I played on launch day and it was freaking ghost town, and it was awful.
Returned it.
Yeah, so did we. Yeah, we got it.
I was just too into it. I was like, this, maybe they'll have an update and this will be good. And then it was terrible forever.
It's like going back to a bad relationship. Yeah, she'll change. She'll be different this time.
Yeah, like, it's okay, Bethesda. I want the bugs. It's fine. Starfield is really refreshing because it was buggy and awesome. With that being said, though, I will say, David, this is going to be a new experience for you as well. I know Pete kind of walked Tony and I through it last year, and that was the first time really me ever playing like one D20 system, let alone two. So I
double the D20s.
Yeah, I got the experience to play my very first ever 2D20, and you have not played one of those yet, correct?
No. The only games that I've actually played are a D20, like a D&D system, and then actually a D6 system. So it's just using six-sided die. But I've never played a D20 So Pete, can you tell me what makes this fundamentally different than a typical or a traditional D20 tabletop RPG? And for people who don't know what we're talking about, a D20 is a 20-sided die. So this one, yeah, I would assume uses two of these dies, but what makes it different?
So a general like D&D like game, so D&D, Pathfinder, it'd be sort of like Castles and Crusades, things like that. They all use a mechanic called a target number, where you have a dice in your hand that you need to roll, and the GM has set a target for something that's happening. So you're trying to climb a cliff, you're trying to swing your sword at an enemy. There'll be a number that you need to roll on that dice to hit it, and then your character will have stats that will enhance or subtract from that roll every single time you roll the dice. And so like on a roll of, say, you rolled a 13, but the target monster that you're trying to hit, its armor is a 15. Well, unless you had something like your strength score big enough or a weapon that was magical, you missed. And so you've got this huge range of numbers of things that you kind of need to worry about in regards to that, versus the system that I run for this, which is from Modiphius, is called the 2d20 system. And it is a success-based dice roll system. Sorry if I'm really nerding out here. So success-based dice systems, which you'll find in some of the D6 systems as well, is you're rolling to get a number of successes. So you're rolling multiple dice, trying to get number of successes. So the difficulty increases the more successes you need to get. And in the 2d20 system, there's also a complication range. So you have successes and critical successes at the low end of the dice, and you have a complication range at the high end of the dice. And complications can have bad things immediately or bad things down the road. And that's up to the GM to kind of figure out.
Okay. Typically, complications are bad. Yes.
And so that could be the thing is like,
just you, helping.
So you could, a complication though, doesn't mean you failed the roll. It means one of your dice rolled a complication, the other one could have succeeded. So doing something like, let's say you're in a firefight and you want to dive for cover without somebody noticing. Well, that would be like a difficulty 2 test. So you roll 2d20, you get a critical success on one dice, which I'll explain later in the character creation, which guarantees 2 successes, but the other die rolled a 20. So you got... You made your roll because you needed 2 successes to dive into cover without the enemy noticing. But you got a complication. It means you clipped your knee on the top of the barrier that you're jumping over, and it literally collapsed behind you. So you're in cover, but now it's damaged. So that would be a complication.
So it sounds very similar to another game that I have never played, but I have a lot of the resources, and this is the Star Wars role-playing game. So they have the dice that they use for that is a success. It's a success-based dice system. So my assumption is that I guess it's a 2d20 system, because it's not a traditional like D&D d20 system with it has modifiers, yeah. But it's so like based off of that
kind Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Coriolis, they all use like a die 6 mechanic for doing successes.
Now, do you find
neither ones or sixes will be like the critical success.
Yeah. Do you find that this kind of dice system leads to better storytelling versus doing something where you have to do like the math before you can continue on with the action?
It's the math is very simple in this. There's not a lot of addition and subtraction that you need to worry about, because you'll have literally a number on your character sheet. You combine the two of them together. That gets you your range that you have to roll the dice in. So it doesn't matter where you roll the dice. As long as between those numbers on your character sheet, you make it. And what changes is how you roll your amount of dice. So you always have a base 2 dice that you get to roll. But let's say I made a difficulty 3 test. How are you going to do that with 2 dice? So the game has mechanics for basically increasing your dice pool up to a maximum of 5.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so Tony and Sean got to experience that a little bit, and they got to experience how some of the other stats on your character were able to like alter things that happen to make it a more cinematic experience. So I find this system, which I play in Star Trek, I also play in Dune, are very sort of cinematic, and it's a lot more role play based versus number crunchy math based. And like,
well, I definitely noticed that too, because there's another stat. I'm not sure if it's unique to Fallout, but there's a stat called luck, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Which you can just use as a player as a some sort of narrative device to just move things forward.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
I want to but just it's, have it. Okay, it's a limited
resource. You have a limited amount.
It is a limited resource.
I think in the Star Wars RPG, that's like force points.
Yeah.
So, these are called AP, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. It's action points, just like in the video games where you had your action points for the amount of things you could do per turn in the turn-based part of the video game. Or even in Fallout 4, you've got the little bar that decreases as you do things and shoot in the game. Especially when you use in VATS, you notice it a lot. Yeah. In this, your action points are your ability to buy extra dice and do extra things. And then your luck points are the way of like altering fate.
Right, right. So,
and if I remember correctly as well, the DM also has action points that they can spend, right?
Correct. And so every play session or every sort of adventure start, the GM gets a certain amount based on the amount of players that are playing that time. Mm-hmm. And then he can spend and use them just like the players can for any of his NPC characters or events that are happening in the world, like environmental effects or whatever. Let's say you're trying to outrun a rad storm that was coming. I could basically say, okay, you guys are making all of your your survival checks and everything else you need to do to kind of keep hobbling through the ruins and find shelter somewhere. And then I can spend two of these action points, and suddenly there's like literally a lake of like molten radiated water or whatever, like it's bubbling in front of you and you have to figure out a way to get around that. And just kind of, it's a way of putting difficulty into your life for narrative reasons, or making like combat more challenging. The same as like you guys can use it to make your life easier. Now,
oh, that's great.
If you don't have any and you need to, like I said, you may need to make that like difficulty 3 roll, but you only have 2 dice, you can spend the action point. But what that means is I get it. You don't get to use it. I get it instead, which means on a subsequent roll or an idea, I can use it against you. So there's a succeed at cost sort of mechanic.
Yeah.
Now, are sexual favors also acceptable in the luck mechanic? Not for myself. I'm asking for Tony because.
Oddly enough, one of the parts of luck is you can introduce new narrative things in the scene based on GM's discretion.
Cool. So bring that bottle of that jar of Vaseline.
So
and it was at 41 minutes and 48 seconds I lost my lunch this time. Sorry, listeners. So I want to do something unique to our show because it's something that we can draw from the past and go into the present. So Tony, I'm going to ask you to quickly turn on your rememberer and give us a kind of like quick rundown or synopsis of what happened in our last Fallout game. And then Pete, I'm going to get you to follow that up with what the premise of the new Fallout game is going to be. Obviously you can't give away the story because the three of us are playing in it and we're really excited to do so.
What I'm developing with you guys is going to be different for anybody else who's actually joining us at the table.
Which is fine. We're just looking for the,
because you guys are special.
SP. Yeah. We just want to know like the basic background of what kind of story we're walking into. But it's interesting to go a year back, especially with Tony learning more about Fallout, just like what those characters actually meant to him versus now. So take it away.
Well, it's going to be hard for me to remember it with all the proper terms because I didn't know anything about it, but I know
just
I was playing
up
a
terms.
Ghoul. Yeah, I'm just making up terms. I was playing a ghoul, which now I know how cool they actually are, and I definitely did not play it well.
Not all of them are like the one in the TV show. So.
Oh, yeah, still, but that was very inspiring to see. But so I was a ghoul. Sean was a smooth talker, you know, just trying to cause some shit and control the people around him.
Sean was very interested in seeing who he could murder just out of spite the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
I want to murder them, 100%. And I want to find and take their laser gun was a lot of the premise behind Sean's character.
Yeah, you know what? It worked out for me because, as Tony will allude to, I got the Brahmin. And I got everything that was on that Brahmin. Nobody else cared, but I did it. And I manipulated that super mutant.
True.
Oh, yeah. So wait, so a Brahmin, was this the cow creature thing?
It's the cow with two heads that they basically use as like farming and pack mules.
Ah, yeah. Okay. I'm connecting names I know now to what I played a year ago. Because I remembered it as a cow. So now it's a Brahmin. That makes sense.
So yeah, what was the premise of our game? What did we have to do?
Well, we needed to make pizza. That was the main premise, which was, it's like the perfect story device for a one shot at a convention, because it really scopes in the problem and it's so achievable. But then what's fun is the adventure we go on to achieve this what appears to be a simple task, but there's so much drama and intrigue that occurs as we're trying to collect all these different ingredients.
Just like making a real pizza in real life.
Just like making a real pizza. Yeah. It's never as simple as just getting pizza ingredients. You gotta kill at least a few people.
Yeah, some people at the table had played Fallout before, and then others like you, it was their first time. And so everybody had a different way in their head of thinking about going about the problem and how they're going to go. And watching the dynamics unfold at the table, both in and out of character, trying to figure it out was a lot of fun.
If it weren't for Tony's ghoul, I think we would have done things in a lot more difficult way, because like getting into the vault was one thing, or getting in. Yeah. I think it was another vault that we tried to access.
Yep.
Yeah. You needed supplies from that vault, but, yeah,
they wouldn't let us in. They were locked up
after a pretty bad like firefight. Right. But then Tony was like, why don't we just use Mr. Handy? And we were like, that's so much faster. Yeah, we just abandoned our entire plan to turn Mr. Handy into a pizza oven.
A radioactive pizza oven.
And I was not expecting that at all. that was not part of my original plan in the least. And I was like, okay, how am I flipping and we're going to figure this out now? So that was highly entertaining. And I ran that same module again for basically all the Ragnarok crew, and they did not turn Mr. Handy in a pizza oven at all.
What do they do different?
We actually ran out of time because their firefight at the vault turned so nasty that it was just this massive convoluted mess of corpses and things. They had just gotten the thing fixed, and so I allowed them to get the ingredients, but we kind of ran out of time. Like their game session, because they're all role players, a lot of everything that happened took a little bit longer.
Did you have somebody be like, well, can I just check around this corner? Oh, can I check this out?
Do you remember the giant behemoth super mutant that came through into the settlement?
Yeah.
So they didn't bribe him with the dead mutant hounds. They fought him.
Oh.
Yeah, we gave up the farm as fast as we could.
It destroyed a huge chunk of the settlement. And they eventually whittled them down enough that it just left. But like three of them were almost completely dead by the end of it. Because like one hit from that thing was like destroying cover and barriers and everything. So they, that took a huge chunk of the original time. Just that major fight right there. And then they kind of went off and like found the traitor and found like the vault and stuff like that. And then the vault fight, they got like crazy in as well. So, it was also a lot bigger crew. So I was playing with, 7 or 8 people that time.
Oh,
so,
wow. That's a lot of people.
So that really slows it down when everybody's got to take a turn. So small tables mean fast action in between. Yeah. So I think I've limited my table, I think, to 5 seats this year. So it'll be like you guys and then like 2 other people who get to join it.
Ooh, special guests. All right. So can you tease a little bit about the Fallout story, or are you not going to give us anything?
So it's with you guys. It starts in October of 2077. So this is before the bombs drop.
Oh, ooh.
You guys are nearing the end of your tenure at Vault Tech U.
Cool.
So Vault Tech U is basically where they train up various vault technicians, overseers, all the workings on all the vault, because they're basically meant to be self-sufficient, like biospheres, right? So everything that happens in a vault needs to have a plan, because it's going to be a long-term, multi-generational system. So the people going through Vault Tech U are the ones who are planning vaults and planning how they're going to run. And so it's basically like overseer school.
And if you watch the TV show, the overseers are all corrupt, which is not good. They let people in, take over. Sorry. Just went back into like full Fallout.
So Fallout is dystopian, right? Like it is, things have not gone well for human society. It starts off with a massive, sort of like, ultra capitalistic society, but also authoritarian. And There is the Sino-American War, which is basically China and the States butting heads. China has thrown a bunch of incursions into Alaska. The U.S. has annexed Canada. Like, things are not going well for people if you're not in sort of the Central America situation for the most part. And it's why, like, if you played any of the games, all the major cities are basically like thermonuclear wastelands, because it was two major superpowers lobbing nukes at each other and nobody wins.
Kind of like real life. So
yeah, stark parallels right now.
Yeah, so we wanted to part of what we wanted to get done today in this conversation is we want to make some of our characters for this upcoming Ragnarok event and all that stuff. So you had given us some pointers or some tips or some tools to use to create characters. So can we start, let's start making some of these characters and you guiding us through the process that, so that we have something so that we can play rather than talk about playing.
Okay. So the first thing, you have a concept of a character in your head of what you kind of want to play and you have a name. So I'd need you guys to introduce yourselves to each other as your character and kind of like what you look like and what your mannerisms are so that people listening can kind of like get an idea of who you're going to be playing at the con. Cause people can come check out and watch the game as we play if they want to. And so I've had you load into the VTT system where I just kind of like store a lot of this stuff. And so we'll fill out some of the character sheets and then we're going to do a fun little side project that one of the major homebrew DMs has created, which is fantastic.
Perfect. In the interest of time, I will go first because I've already pre-created some of my stuff. So gentlemen, my name is Bobby Jet Thompson. So my friends call me Jet, but my birth name is Bobby. I'm a pre-war survivor like all of you guys. I was insanely popular back in school, played sports with the greatest of ease, and I was able to smoothly talk my way out of all the trouble. No police could ever catch me.
Nice.
That is Bobby.
All right. David, what do you got for me?
David didn't even come up with anything.
I just have a name. I just have a name. I'm Die Hardman.
Nice.
So that sounds like it would be maybe someone who was on here on kind of like a student visa from another country.
Do they have those?
Still? Yeah. Yeah.
You're Die Hardman from England, and you're going to have to play the entire thing with a brutal English accent that we are going to hold you to. Or you could be the guy. You could be that guy who moved from Canada, eh? They think you're slow. That's a good Simpsons reference.
Yeah, that could be. I could be from Canada. I could be from like far up north, you know, like far away from anyone else. So I have no real knowledge of the southern part of the world. There's a lot of things that are new to me in here. We didn't have much where I came from, where I grew up in. It was mostly just, you know, living off the land. And a few.
So you're very resourceful then.
Yeah. Like a few, we would get like a few tech items that come through, you know, through traveling merchants. But for the most part, my family, my clan, whatever we want to call it, they kind of stayed away from technology because technology and like the main, like major stuff was always like the root of something bigger that was going to, you know, turn into something worse, right?
Yeah, like the microwave turning into a nuke.
As great as all this technology was, my ancestors and my family knew that it was going to be the demise of humanity, which it kind of was.
Well, so if you remember at this time, like all the cars and everything driving around were basically had mini nuclear reactors in them.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah.
They're a ticking time bomb driving along, as it were. All right, Tony, what do you got for us?
I am Polly Patchwell. I'm a near graduate of Vault Tech. I'm majoring in experimental biochem. I have a near perfect GPA, except I am failing ethics. I don't believe in it. I think it's so much better to just experiment and think about ethics afterwards. I have a full ride scholarship for my amazing work in biochem and mutations and the sequencing the genome.
No!
Interesting. Okay, so in Fallout, in the character creation, you've got kind of like a concept now of your character, which was really fun to listen to there. There's something that happens. It kind of happens in six steps, which is choosing your origin. In this case, because of the archetypes that are available right now, you guys are going to be vault dwellers, even though your students, you don't live in a vault, but you're training to go and be part of a vault, right? So the background's going to be a vault dweller. You have special attributes. And special is something that's pulled directly from the video games, which is like your strength and dexterity and everything from D&D. It is unique to Fallout, and it's been used in every single one of their games forever, all the way since Fallout 1. And it's used a lot in Fallout 4, the perk system and everything that they created in Fallout 4, which is new to the series, is based around a lot of the mechanics in that as well. So your special is your strength, your perception, your endurance, your charisma, your intelligence, your agility, and your luck that Tony touched on before. Luck's a unique mechanic in that you don't really ever roll it unless you spend a luck point to roll it. In which case you would use your luck stat to roll whatever test you need to do versus something else, which only really works if you've got a really good luck score. So if you don't have a good luck score, that's part of the mechanic that you may not use very often. Unless it's, let's say you've got a stat that's around a 4 and your luck was 5. Well, the luck gets you one better chance at the dice roll, right? So strength is used for anything in the game mechanics, physical. So it affects your carry weight and affects how much damage you do if you hit something. Perception is basically how easily you notice danger, things around you, how aware you are of things in your environment. It helps things like if you have like energy weapons and stuff like that, how you shoot, and a few other skills. Every skill in the game ties into one of these scores, and that's generally how you will roll it. So it's really easy to track as you play. And sometimes as the GM, I'll make you kind of switch up your main special score that you're using for a skill check. But for the most part, you're rolling straight up what it says on your character sheet, which makes it super simple to follow. Charisma, of course, sounds like it's right up Sean's alley, with his smarmy talk in there, which allows you to like influence other people, get cheaper prices with vendors, things like that. It's like if you're solving problems with your mouth versus with your fists.
Hey, Sean's used at solving problems with his mouth.
Jesus!
I walked into that one. Intelligence is basically how smart you are. It can affect a lot of things in, say, like if you're into repairing or if you're into science or if you're into medicine, things like that. Agility is how fit and fast you are. It can affect your ability to do things. It affects sort of small hand-eye coordination things, as well as shooting like small guns and stuff like that. And then we have luck, which is basically how fortunate you are. And that ties into like that other mechanic in the game. So everybody's going to have a luck score, but everybody's might be slightly different.
Okay, so how do we customize these scores, right? Because I know in Dungeons and Dragons, mm-hmm. you have like your set modifier, and then you have some points that you can adjust positive or negative or whatever.
Exactly. So how do we do that in this? Based on the character concept that you just kind of told me, you have, if you open up your character sheet, you go to view and then hit the little wrench.
For anyone who doesn't know, we are generating these online together right now that we're going to then use these for the live game that we're going to play at Ragnarok. So
yeah, so you'll see on the character sheet, it's got your special scores, and then below that is your skills. Don't worry about your skills right now. We're going to do that in a minute. So you've got your strength, your perception, your endurance. Everything's at a 5. Every character starts at a base 5. You're average. You're the averagest average person around. You have 5 skill points you can put into these 7 categories. At a starting character, level 1, you can have a maximum of 10 in a skill. You can cost yourself 1 skill point basically down, because you can only ever have a minimum of 4 in a skill point unless you're an NPC character in anything. So you've got 5 to spend, but you can buy more by making yourself really bad in a stat.
So we can lower 1 stat to a maximum of 4, but then put that stat into another skill point.
Correct. So you have 5. You could basically lower like a bunch of stuff and give 2 stats that are really good. You could have 1 out of 10. Like 10 is exceptionalism in that category. An average is between like 5, 6, and 7. You're getting slightly better at 7. There's ways in the game further on, like if you survive and level up, of getting those stats higher than 10. But for the most part, once these are set, they're kind of set in stone. And I put that in like air parentheses.
Yeah. I think you get 40 points to start or to distribute. Oh, I must be wrong.
So if you're looking through the quick start rules, things could be a slightly different. So this is the general mechanic. You get 5. You can drop down to 4 on anything to buy extra points. But you have basically the 5 to buy. So let's say Tony's character, it sounds like he's in the doctorate sort of theoretical area. He's probably going to have a better intelligence than most. And that'll reflect in any skill rules that require intelligence really nicely. Because what happens in this is you have a special score and you have a skill score. And you combine those two numbers together, and that is your success range that you need to roll on your dice. So if you roll inside or under those two numbers combined, you succeed at your roll. And the amount of successes you roll on the number of dice that you roll is based on that number range.
Got it. So like, it's good to be average.
It's good to be average, but it's okay to not, because it makes great role play situations. Failing roles means weird things happen in this game.
True.
And then we're going to do something that comes out of the Fallout 3 video game. So the first person view version of Fallout that wasn't like an isometric RPG or tactical game, which was the GOAT test, which you needed to do to leave the vault in the game. And it's just a set of simple questions, but what it does is it generates your skill points based on what your character would be doing in those situations, and it will assign the tag skills. Tag skills are unique because they allow you to really up your success game, because any skill that's tagged, if you roll, you have your dice range for your 2d20 that you're rolling, which could be, you know, it could be a 7 you got to roll under if you're really crappy, or it could be if you have like no skills in something, or it could be like a 15 if you're really good sort of situation. But if you have a tag skill, that tag skill allows any number that's rolled underneath the number or the value of that skill, it counts as 2 successes.
Cool.
So that's how you get crits in this game.
So it's a lot of work to prepare for a character, is what you're saying.
Ish. You can literally just randomly click stuff up and down and you're good to go, right?
That's what I did.
Yeah.
Do you remember when I said I hate doing character creation?
Yeah, absolutely. I did. Now, for our listeners at home, a lot of what David and I are going to do after the characters are created is we're just going to create like a little synopsis video of the 3 characters that we created so that you guys know how we're going to be playing it, especially because we're going to be doing some footage at the con. But when it comes to the like after we've completed the GOAT test, what kind of comes next in the prepping to venture out of the vault?
So the goat test is going to determine your skills. And so you're going to base that on kind of how your character would answer. That'll also determine your tag skills as well. And then, so you don't have to worry about that. I'll take care of that. And then you get a perk. And then we're going to kind of like really shrink up the perk allotment, because the game basically comes with like a deck of cards of perks available. So it's like going through the D&D DM's guide, where you've got just so many options to choose from. So we're going to super limit that to like just a few, just for the sake of like quick pre-gen role playing. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to worry about your starting equipment. There is a thing in the Fallout character creation called derived statistics. And they are how you calculate your carry weight, your initiative in combat, your health points, and things like that. So health points is based on like your endurance and your agility. Your initiative is based on like your luck and your perception. So things like that. There's a couple that you combine together, and that's how you get that number. But if we go through like all the mechanics and the rules crunchy, it kind of slows everything down. So we'll just do it.
100%.
And then starting equipment, you're going to have none right now. You're students.
Oh, so we don't have anything from the vault or anything. Okay.
No. You're in this premise, you guys are students. You're meeting up for one of your final lab classes. You're hanging out at the Red Rocket, just getting, you know, some slushy type drinks before you head into school. So.
And then the world goes boom.
So you are in October of 2077 right now, timeline wise. So not that far in the future from us right now.
Yeah,
this is when the some of the vaults have been created. The rest are still kind of like being built. You have no idea how many or where they are, because it's all hush hush government contracts. But yeah, this corporation has its own university, you know, a la like McDonald's U type thing.
Excellent. So, in the interest of time, we want to ask you one really impactful question when it comes to Fallout. Now, there are two spaces available at our game still, from what I understand. If not, sorry, you guys snooze, you lose. But there's also another Fallout game happening at the con.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, in your words, why should people want to play Fallout? Why should people be diving at the opportunity to play this RPG versus any other RPG that you can play at Ragnarok?
Fallout lets you dip into the sci-fi pseudo spaghetti western dystopia of just pure ridiculousness.
Did you practice that? Because that was like near perfect.
I stayed up about 2 a.m. writing that. The game lends itself well to people who are literally looking to have just fun. It's not too numbers crunchy. It is very quick to play. And it allows for some really weird and unique role-playing scenarios that you can't really get from other games easily. And the mechanic system of it just makes things happen really fast and smooth. It's very cinematic. So it's more like being in a TV show than, say, going off on a very true sword and board adventure.
Which is exciting in itself. Like, I was drawn to the game solely because it was Fallout. You've been hyping it to me for a year and a half. I got to play it last year. I was super excited, and I'm super grateful for the opportunity for us and the team on Scene on Screen, like going back to Ragnarok with you guys this year. It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun, which is super exciting, right? So just to summarize, you guys got to listen to a firsthand account of the beginning of the character creation for Fallout, the tabletop RPG. We will have a more extended look at our characters once they are created, which we're also really excited for. I'm really excited for what kind of chaos Tony's character is going to provide us this time, because I could sense a little bit of pop in there. And I don't know if I want to deal with another little pop incident. So we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll turn on him. Maybe D. Hardman, the Frenchman from up north, is going to cause some problems, and maybe Bobby Jet Thompson is going to be out there just trying to be a smooth talker. Fun fact, the reason I wanted to be a high charisma player for this specific game was I redid a Fallout 3 playthrough where charisma was the highest, and I tried to talk the guy out of blowing up Megaton, and I failed. So then I had to play the entire game at high charisma with like no other skills until I found all the bobbleheads. So it was a very challenging game to beat, and no, I did not continue the game beyond Project Purity, because I hated that character. So I played through as fast as I could. It was very difficult, especially with how impossible Fallout 3 made it for you to barter versus New Vegas versus 4 versus even Vault 77, right? Or 76. So with that being said, Pete, do you want to close us off with anything exciting that we should be looking for at Ragnarok or anything for our listeners?
Well, through you guys, since you've been such good sponsors last year and this year, we're going to let you give away some tickets to come join us. I think
that's exciting. I think some freebies.
Like, we give away free games at the con. Now you can give away some free tickets to come join us.
Yeah, so free giveaways to get to the free giveaways. You guys love free stuff. If I were listening to this as David, I would be signing up every contest to try and get free shit so I can get more free shit.
I've already started signing up for everything.
Wait a second. Why is your name in my inbox? What the hell? Well, Pete, that is very generous, and we're very grateful to be at Ragnarok. You guys will see the likes of myself, David, and Tony at the event. We'll be walking around. Enjoying some.
And if you don't know what they look like, I'm going to put them up on the website, and they will have some Ragnarok shirts to be wearing as well.
Oh, so nice. we're definitely going to look like we're part of the crew. You'll find me with a nice stein of Fimbulwinter in my hand.
Oh, I hope so.
I will be enjoying the con and the beer and the games. And you guys, come say hi, take a picture with us. We're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be great. Tony, any closing remarks?
Oh, thank you for having me on. And thank you, Pete, for inviting us to Ragnarok. I'm really excited, looking forward to it. And really looking forward to seeing this Fallout game play out. So thank you again.
As I've said, he has been shaking.
Go do some play to win. Sean won games last year at the play to win.
So did Tony.
Oh, yeah, I did as well.
Oh, yeah.
So for all the listeners, two of three people.
And,
well, I wasn't there last year.
Two of two people.
Two of two, so.
That's 100% chance to win, guys.
Tony also bought a brand new Kickstarter that was there. It was like a war style, a card drawing war style game, but it was a wrestling game. And it was really fun to kind of play and learn the mechanics. We played with the developer, and I think
Undisputed?
Undisputed, yeah. Signed my copy, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think I got my copy signed, too.
That's really fun.
I try to do it anytime I have a game developer that I'm buying the game from. I always try to get them to sign the copy because it just makes it feel special.
On the shrink wrap, right?
I open it and put it in the box or on the lid.
Can you sign the shrink wrap so that it doesn't ruin the actual box? Thanks.
And there's one person who actually opens the box and is like, can you sign the inside of my box so I can see it but nobody else can? That is mine. David, any final thoughts?
No.
No thoughts, just vibes.
I'm just vibing. Yeah.
I feel that.
Well, I love to hear it. So for myself.
Wow, wow, is it very nice?
And David.
That Hansel's so hot right now.
And our wonderful guests, Tony and Pete.
Me's not going to hurt you, sir.
Great choice. We want to thank you all for listening. We hope to see you at Ragnarok 5.0, and we will catch you on the next episode of the Scene on Screen podcast.
Attention all you gamers, hobbyists, and lovers of all things dicey. Ragnarok 5.0 is upon us. Mark your calendars for April 26th and 27th, 2025, because the museum in downtown Kitchener is about to be overrun by board game enthusiasts, RPG fanatics, and maybe even a few real-life Vikings. That's right, folks. We're talking board games, RPGs, miniature games, vendors, and enough dice rolling to make your head spin. But wait, there's more. We've got open gaming tables, a massive Ragnarok library where you can try before you buy, and the return of Play to Win where you can win free games just by playing. So gather your friends, sharpen your dice, and get ready to game like the world is ending. Ragnarok 5.0. See you there.